This is the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Now, here's Andy Burcham with another Talking Tigers podcast.
Today marks the one-year anniversary of the tragic deaths of Rod and Paula Bramblett. A family lost its mother and father, son and daughter, brother and sister, aunt and uncle. We lost our friends, and Auburn lost its voice. Last year, prior to the Auburn football season, Brad Law with the Auburn Sports Network produced a tribute to Rod. The tribute features Brad, former Auburn baseball coach Hal Baird, Paul Ellen, Stan White, Quentin Riggins, and yours truly, talking about our friend and colleague. It includes a Talking Tigers podcast with Rod from 2018, prior to his final season as voice of the Tigers. A tribute to Rod Bramblett in a special Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles.
Rod Bramblett entertained Auburn fans for 26 baseball seasons and 16 more as the lead announcer for football and men's basketball. Rod's calls of some of the most memorable achievements in Auburn history will rekindle the excitement of those moments each time they're heard for generations to come. This is an Auburn Sports Network Memorial Podcast, celebrating the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Rod Bramblett. Coming up, you'll hear some of Rod's broadcast colleagues talk about his most well-known calls and even some obscure ones, and you'll hear the highlights themselves. We'll begin with an excerpt from a podcast for which Rod agreed to visit in studio with his good friend, Andy Burcham.
And you hit five and you really don't think about that. You hit 10 years and that's a decade. Hit 15 and you start thinking about it a little bit more. And heck, for baseball, it's been much longer than that. For you and I, it'll be 25 coming up this spring. You know, I think it's natural the older you get to reminisce even more. And I've probably done that a little bit more going into this next broadcast season.
All right. What do you remember about the first Auburn football game that you called?
Being scared to death. It's one of the few times that I've been nervous to the point where I was a little bit worried that words would come out of my mouth. Because, I mean, you were there, and Jim passed away, and there was a lot of, well, what are we going to do now in terms of the radio broadcasts? And we're all so fortunate. I mean, our radio crew is the best because we're like a family away from our families in the fall. And I think that helped me prepare for that first season a lot, knowing that Stan and Quentin, Paul, yourself, we're all, it's all, nothing else changed. That helped me out a lot. But I just remember being very nervous and realizing how important Jim had made that job. It wasn't, and this is nothing against Paul or Gary Sanders or Buddy Rutledge as you go back and back, but Jim made the job of play-by-play announcer at Auburn a really, really important thing to the fans. And there was pressure there. At the end of the day, just like we all do, we just have to have confidence that we know what we're doing. We've prepared for this. And, I love telling the story when I go to Auburn clubs. To this day, I tell the story about Jim always saying, you never say touchdown, unless it was happening. He always said it was a jinx. The thing I remember about the first game, and you didn't realize it till after the fact, to honor Jim, the cheerleaders led one side of the stadium in touchdown and the other side of the stadium in, before the game. And
you still can't say it?
I know. Okay. No. All right. And here's why. Auburn, we all know what happened. Auburn didn't score a touchdown for 2.5 games. And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Jinx. I was doing postgame for those two.
The jinx is right. So I remember that about that first game. And I remember it being really, really hot, too. Oh, my wife was, who's not a big sports fan, and my daughter Shelby was 4 at the time, almost 5, but my wife was 8 months pregnant with Joshua Baird. And so she was in a real good mood to be there on that opening game. I remember that because it was about 98 degrees, I think, when you factored in the heat and humidity and all of that. But it seems like yesterday, and yet it seems like a really, really long time ago.
Was thinking about Jim the other day and his legacy. Mm-hmm. And the generation of play-by-play men in this league, that he was part of. And unfortunately, that group of men has passed. Mm-hmm. With Larry Munson at Georgia, Jack Crystal at Mississippi State, John Ward at Tennessee. Those are the guys that kind of came to my mind that were part of that generation. And Jim certainly was part of that generation. And that was they were elegant broadcasters. One of the many things that I admired about Jim was how he painted a picture. And he and I were talking one day. We were at Mississippi State for a game. And he was talking about how much he admired Jack Crystal. Because for many years as the football play-by-play man at Mississippi State, Jack Crystal was not broadcasting a great team.
Yeah.
But he talked about how Jack Crystal painted the picture. Jim took a backseat to no one in painting a picture. I'll never forget his tease prior to the 93 Auburn-Alabama game, because the only way to watch that game was listening to Jim. Remember, there was no TV of any kind that year.
Yeah.
And Jim's description of a man in Alaska listening to that game, awesome. And it was a different generation of broadcasters then.
Yes, and the greatest compliment that I get is when someone sends me a note or tweets at me now. You don't get notes very often. You either get emails or tweets. Or just someone comes up to me and says, "Rod, we didn't think anyone could ever replace or fill the shoes of Jim. And you are doing a great job." That's the greatest compliment ever. Because Jim was, you're at painting a picture, I'm nowhere close to the way Jim could paint a picture. But when a fan tells me that, it does, believe me, I may not say it, but I do appreciate it. That is the greatest compliment anyone could pay to me, because Jim Fife was among, and will, till the end of days, will be, you know, just one of the greatest play-by-play guys ever for because of the way he could paint a picture.
Yeah.
I may get in trouble for saying this, and you and I have talked about it. I think he was better at basketball than he was at football.
Well, he came from basketball. Yeah. Remember, he came from Kentucky.
Yeah.
So he came from basketball country.
Yeah.
To hear that is not surprising. Yeah. It certainly was as important to him as football was. And we all miss Jim.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, it was a different generation of folks.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're one of those guys out there, Rod, that is among... You're among the deans now. That's amazing. Yeah, you're among the deans in the SEC. I mean, Dave Kellum's been doing it for quite some time. I mean, Jim Ellis just stepped down.
Mick Hubert's been around a while. Who else? Bob Kessling has been doing it 20 years now for Tennessee. It is hard to imagine that I've now moved up.
Joe Fisher at Vanderbilt has been doing it for a while.
Yep.
But for many, you know, Dave South just stepped down after a long stint at Texas A&M. Yep. Jim Hawthorne just a few years ago at LSU. I mean,
there's another one of the classic play-by-play guys.
So
Jim Hawthorne. Yeah, it's hard to believe, and you know, very fortunate to continue to do it. But it's it is amazing to think that all of a sudden you've gone from 15 years ago being the newbie to going into year 16 and being one of the top 5 or 6 tenure-wise.
Right. It's a fraternity of folks, though, isn't it? Because listen. We're all there broadcasting for our school, all right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no question of that. But the relationship that you have, and Jim had this relationship, and Eli Gold. I mean,
That's right.
You know, and you're establishing that. You have established that relationship with Eli. But the relationship that you establish with the various voices, whether it's during football, basketball, certainly during baseball season, is unique.
Yeah.
Because listen, it's an understood. We're there for the school that we're calling for.
Uh-huh.
But there is friendship. There is concern. I mean, what Chris Stewart went through during this past baseball season, it breaks down a lot of barriers between school and school.
And that, to me, is one of the most – or one of the biggest perks of the job, getting to know these other guys. Because they're all good guys. I mean, you think about our league right now. And listen, our business has guys that are, you know. The SEC doesn't. Their play-by-play guys are all good people.
Mm-hmm.
Good people. Chris Stewart and I joke to this day about how, I mean, we'll talk. Eli and I text back and forth. I mean, not every day, but I mean, you know, I know if I need something, I could call Eli and ask him, and the same thing he could ask me. But Chris Stewart and I always joke that, you know, we have to, in public, you know, we can be buddy-buddy till about 30 minutes before the game starts. And then, you know, fans don't want to see us palling around too much. And you mentioned baseball. Baseball is the best because you're in a town so long.
Right.
We've been doing it so long. You look forward to not only calling the games and going to Oxford, Mississippi, but you look forward to visiting with Dave Kellum. You look forward to visiting with Joe Fisher when you go to Nashville or when he comes here. It's a great fraternity, and we all relate to one another. We all do the same job. We all have a little different situation. But, you know, I think we all have an appreciation of what the job entails, and it's really cool getting to know these guys.
You mentioned our crew, and it's been this way since day one, back in 1990, when it was Jim and Charlie, Paul Ellen, myself. The next year, Quentin Riggins was added as the sideline guy. And I listen, to say that it has to be unique at Auburn, that's short-sighted. We know that the crews are around in all of college athletics are special to them. But the fact that our crew has been together, this current crew has been together as long as it has. And, you know, Bo Benton stepped down not too long ago as the spotter. Gene Dulaney now is spotting and also doing stats. But I can't tell you how special Friday nights are on the road before a big SEC football game with this crew. Because dinner is really important.
Yeah. For a multitude of reasons.
And there's planning that goes into where we go.
And you and I typically lead that charge.
Well, as well we should. Should come as no surprise. That meal together.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we don't all travel together. So that's maybe the first opportunity we get to be together on the road. You know, for a home game, we're all coming in from different directions. We spend time together. Maybe before the game on the Tiger Tailgate Show, or we have a meal. We do the game, and then we all go. For an away game, though, we're together for a while. So that Friday night meal is really important.
And we have a ball. I mean, it's a chance. And yes, where we go, there's certain places we go where there's no discussion about where we're eating.
Sure.
We go to Fayetteville, we're going to Herman's.
Yes.
We go to Knoxville, we're going to Ye Olde Steakhouse.
Right.
If we go to Starkville and the timing works out, we go to Columbus, Mississippi and eat at Old Hickory. It's a big deal. And I think, again, that's one of the perks that fans don't get to see. They don't get to see us as a crew get together like that, share stories, joke around. It really is special. But let me tell you this about the crew. And you're right. I mean, we're not unique necessarily. Other schools have announcers that they identify with and their crews they identify with. But I do think we do have a unique situation because everyone on our crew has either graduated from Auburn, played for Auburn, or been a part of Auburn since the late 80s. I mean, it's a combination. I mean, there is an Auburn connection, a deep Auburn connection with everyone on our crew. And I think that's what I'm biased, but I do think that's what sets us apart. Truly, we all get along.
Yeah.
I mean, we all care about one another and their families, and it's special. And football is unique because it's such a big crew. It's different for basketball. It's a smaller group. Same thing for baseball. It's the two of us. But football, it's a bigger, smaller kind of extended family, and I hope that it shows up when we're doing a broadcast. I hope that it shows, and I think it does, particularly when we're all joking around on the pregame show, that how much we enjoy each other's company and how much we care about each other.
What did people call you as a kid of the job that you did in Valley, Alabama?
Just my name? Or?
No. The nickname they had for you as a worker in Valley, Alabama.
Well, I worked in the textile mills in the summers, thanks to my grandfather, who was very influential in my life. You know, there was one summer I worked in a true cotton mill. The other summers through college, it wasn't a true cotton mill. It was they made the polyurethane-coated yarn for outdoor furniture. But still, if you worked in the textile mills, whether it was part-time, full-time, it didn't matter. And I don't know, and I apologize if this offends people now, but I don't think it was a real endearing term at the time, but you're called a lint head. And let me tell you something. My grandfather made sure I was working in the textile mills every summer because he knew if I worked at the textile mills every summer, I'd finish my college degree because that's hard, hard work. It was just expected of me. I mean, you know, it was just in the summertime in particular, you were going to work, you know. A couple of those summers I worked both in the textile mills and part-time in radio, starting my sophomore year. It's just kind of what you did. And, of course, those textile mills are no longer now. And many of them have been torn down and demolished, and there are a couple that are still up, but it's kind of sad, to be honest with you.
Speaking of a lost generation.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is, because you still have a ton of people, my mom being one of them. Now, she didn't work in the textile mills. You either worked in the mills or you were probably an educator. I mean, those were the two, basically. My mom was an educator and eventually became principal at my high school, in Valley High School. She still lives there. And there's so many people that I went to school with or my grandfather worked with that are still alive, and they still live in the valley, but they're no, you know, the textile industry is just not a thing anymore.
Well, it moved away.
Yeah, it's moved away, and now the automotive industry's kind of moved in, and there's a lot of things, satellite stuff going on with that people work, and it's still a blue-collar town. There's a lot of it. Just hadn't changed much. When you go back, I'll go back and see my mom, and I'll still ride by places that used to frequent when I was a kid, and it's a place with good people, small town with good people. I'd like to think that it taught me like you growing up in a small town in Illinois, it taught you the value of, listen, you got to work for it. It ain't going to be given to you. Mm-hmm. You have to work for it.
Rod works with a spotting board that helps identify tacklers and the wide receivers and the line. Everybody's on there. When did you start working on your spotting board for this game?
During the summer. For the first game, you're able to kind of take your time. You do a little bit at a time. I probably started late July, but spend like an hour on it here or an hour on it there. I always try to look at other spotting boards every year and say, all right, is there somebody doing it better? But then you realize, you know what? The way you do it's the way you're used to, right, and the way you visually you want it to look. Here the last couple of weeks, you work on it a little bit every day. I tell kids when I speak to classes, and I'm sure you do the same thing, they ask about preparation. I said, it's basically like studying for a test every week. You're fortunate enough to have a cheat sheet, but that's what you're doing. I mean, you're being asked to know a lot about a new subject every week. And for basketball, it's twice a week. I enjoy the preparation part of it. And I think to be in this business, you better enjoy the preparation part of it, or you won't be very good.
We both look forward to basketball. I think this is going to be the expectations for the men's program are out of sight. This is a women's team that's going to be much improved over last year. And then when that is done, hopefully those are deep runs in March in the NCAA
tournament.
Hopefully
you and I are missing a lot of baseball.
Yes, and that's nothing against baseball.
No.
But when we are part of that baseball program, and you mentioned it on Tiger Talk, our first Tiger Talk with Butch Thompson, just how special last season was. And you and I have talked off the air many times about this. Last season felt a lot like those teams in the late 80s and the early 90s under Hal Baird.
Yeah. I mean, a team that had talent, and probably a little more talent than Coach Baird's teams had. But the thing that stood out with those teams and last year's team, that blue-collar attitude, team attitude, just the way they played. You're right. It reminded me a lot of those teams. You know, you talk about all the sports that we cover and we're a part of. We enjoy it because we're vested in Auburn, but we're vested in Auburn because of the coaches that we get to work with, the student-athletes we get to know. That's what I think creates the passion that hopefully we can – convey on the radio. Yes, we live and die with Auburn wins and losses. Absolutely. I'm not afraid to admit it that I do. We're not middle of the road. We're not ESPN. We're not CBS. People don't listen to get the middle of the road broadcast. That's just the way it is, and it's because of the people we work with and we care about their success and the student athletes and the coaches. I hate to speak for you, but for me, that's kind of what keeps me going every year.
It's the reason I got into the business. Yeah. I didn't realize it would turn into this, and I didn't realize all the aspects of this job that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. But it's the reason I got into the business. It's the reason I decided when I was 6 years old that this is what I wanted to do.
Man, you knew a lot earlier than me. Holy cow. At 6 years old, I was still watching reruns of Batman and the Flintstones when I came home from school.
I was pretty focused. Thanks for the visit.
Absolutely. War Eagle.
My name's Andy Burcham. Rod and I met when we were both working in local radio in the Auburn-Opelika area. And we met and talked a lot covering Auburn football and the Tuesday press conference, which at that time the Tuesday free lunch was very, very important to us. This is when all of this took place at the old Sewell Hall area. And then we also were covering news events at the time, and we would meet and talk after Auburn City Council meetings about the city council, about Auburn football and baseball and life in general. And that's how our friendship began. And 25 years of driving around the Southeastern Conference in SUVs and vans and spending a lot of time in the car and in hotels and in ballparks, you get to know someone like Rod and I got to know each other. That 95 team, that season featured the series at LSU.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
And you go
right.
down and you get beat on – no, Auburn wins on a Friday night. Ryan Halla on Saturday gets beat.
Is that the one where he stepped in that soft spot on the mound and twisted his ankle?
Yep. Yeah. Right. And then Sunday was –
what a game.
One of the all-time great games.
What a game.
From start to finish. It's in Baton Rouge. It's at the old Alec Box. There are people hanging from the rafters.
Back and forth. Just a great
game.
It
was.
And you win that game in the top of the – coming from behind, win it in the top of the ninth.
Jay Wagner hits a triple, and Kenny Key scores from first.
Yes, he does.
And was flying around the
bases. Yes, he was. That was – and listen, I knew it was special, but that series – and that was my first year doing radio with Rod. But that year, I'm like, wow.
Yeah. They were good. They were really good. And it was we were really good. And they were really good. And it was a great series. I remember that really well, too. I remember Kenny Key. I don't know what his time was. But in the old ballpark, the field was raised.
Yeah.
And he came around third. And, you know, Ken was short. He's about 5'8 or so. And when he came around there, I remember our first base coach said all he could see was his helmet. But that thing was moving. And then there was a cloud of dust at home plate, and that proved to be the winning run. And that I think that clinched the division. But it was a great one. I'm going to tell you one quick story that the players enjoyed. We were in Starkville in 99, I think, and it played really bad on Friday night. And it was wet. And so before we let them off the bus, I got after them pretty good. And it just wasn't our level of play. And I really felt like that either they or us were going to host. Larry Templeton, who was their athletic director, was on the committee as chairman of the committee, and he basically told me that. So I wanted to make sure we had their attention before the Saturday game. So Larry, our bus driver, could have some stories too because he used to sit there. But anyway, we finished our little discussion, and he opened the door.
Now, when you say discussion.
Well, it was a monologue.
Okay. Yeah, discussion would lend you to think it was a two-way street.
What had happened was, and it was purely innocent, really was. I found out later, but I thought I heard a player talking on the way back and hadn't taken the poor performance as seriously as I would have wanted him to. And as it comes out, it was a legitimate reason for that I didn't know about. But nevertheless, they got a dose. And so anyway, Larry opens the door, and I'm getting ready to walk out to get off the bus. and I slip. And I'm getting ready to fall 10 feet off that bus, head first, onto the wet concrete. And I had a briefcase. And my briefcase strap got caught on the railing of the bus. So I went out the bus with the briefcase on my shoulder, and I was swaying back and forth, being suspended by the strap. Now, you know how strong Steve Renfro is. He's grabbing for the strap, trying to keep me from doing a header on the concrete. But Larry had turned the lights of the bus on. So as I rotated out of the bus and then back into the bus and out of the bus, I could see the players trying to keep from laughing after this 20-minute deal that they've had to endure. And they've got their hands on their face because the lights are on, and I'm seeing them, you know, as I'm falling in and out of the bus. You can ask Galimo and Kent and Gross about some of those. They'll remember that one. But, it's what makes it great, isn't it?
Stories. That's it. You know, it's the games are great.
And that's what these kids talk about when they come back. That's what they talk about. They've got the jewelry, know, for winning and stuff, and they cherish it. Yeah. But they love these stories better than anything. I've tried forever, and the great secret of my coaching career at Auburn is that I've never been able to find out what my nickname was to the players. And I know I had one. Back in those dorms and apartments, they had one, and it wasn't complimentary, but I can't find out what it was.
Well, you now know today what our nickname was for you.
And I like that.
It's the Howl or the Bear.
I like that. Right. I like that.
Here to take you through the first three innings, my partner and good friend, Rod Bramblett.
All right, thank you very much, Andy. It is a gorgeous night for baseball.
And to take you through the first three innings of this Auburn-LSU SEC tournament game, my partner and good friend, Rod Bramblett.
I believe that began, as I remember it, it began with the very first broadcast that he and I ever did on the Auburn Network with baseball. It was a home series against Ole Miss in the old Plainsman Park, the old configuration of Plainsman Park. And at that point, Rod was my friend. And it was one of those things that it was organic, so to speak. It just came out, and every broadcast from that point on, every baseball broadcast from that point on, Rod would do the pregame show with the head coach. I would have the offensive lineups in the next segment. And then in the time leading up to the first pitch, I would go down the defensive lineup, and that's when I would introduce Rod as my partner and good friend.
From the stretch, Niles, the 1-2 pitch, swing and a miss, ball game over. Foul tip, and the catcher couldn't hold on. The catcher, Salazar, could not hold on, and David Ross still has a life. It's still 1-2. Wow. Salazar holds on to that. The ball game is over.
You hear of iconic calls. I grew up outside St. Louis, so I had heard all of these calls for the St. Louis Cardinals and the St. Louis Blues by Hall of Fame broadcasters growing up. Iconic calls. And Rod was, you know, early in his Auburn broadcasting career. I'm not sure we understood how big that play was for Auburn, but I knew how big that call was for Auburn and for Rod. And I didn't do much to add to it other than I had trouble forming words. I was so happy at that point.
2-2 the count, two outs. Runner at second base means nothing. The tying run is at first. And here we go again, the 2-2 pitch. Ross swings enough, drive to deep left field. That one's gone. That one's gone. Auburn wins. Auburn wins. Auburn wins. Auburn wins. Auburn wins. I don't believe it, Ross. A three-run homer. The Tigers win. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness! 8-7!
Unbelievable! He hit it out of the ballpark!
David Ross has mobbed at the home plate! I don't believe what I just saw! Oh, my gosh! Oh, my gosh!
The Tigers are going to play for the title tomorrow! David Ross on a 2-2 pitch and a line drive over the left field wall! And Auburn wins 8-7! That's unbelievable.
Put a fork in me. I am done.
Oh, baby.
The Tigers have done it. The impossible. David Ross playing for the injured Casey Dunn. He played his high school ball at Florida High here in Tallahassee. He's the hero today.
It may not be the greatest call of all time, but it certainly conveys the emotion because a pitch or two earlier, Auburn had David Ross had been able to foul off a ball that had just fallen out of the glove of the catcher. Florida State's players were already coming out of the first base dugout to celebrate this big win on Saturday, knowing at that point they would have to just win one more game, and they're in Omaha. And this was a Florida State team that was one of the most talented they ever had. They felt like this was the team that was going to win them their first national championship. J.D. Drew is on that team. It was loaded with talent. But fortunately for Auburn, the Tigers were the home team. And David Ross, who had replaced Casey Dunn in the lineup because Casey had been hit by a pitch earlier in the tournament and was out for the rest of the year, David Ross, who was from Tallahassee, and that was one of the things I was so impressed with Rod listening to that call, is that he remembered that part of the call, that David Ross was in his hometown and had done that. But it was a lightning bolt of a play, because you're one pitch away from losing again in Tallahassee, and you're going to have to come back and beat Florida. You're going to have to come back and win one more game that day and then beat Florida State twice more the next day. Nobody did that in Tallahassee. But Ross hits the home run. It's a no-doubter. So that part was good for Rod, because when he hit it, you knew it was gone. And everybody in that ballpark knew it was gone. Tim Hudson has told the story. It's one of the most happy plays he was ever a part of. And that includes a World Series championship with the Giants and a lot of great baseball. And he was just the guy at second base, jumping into the air as high as he could possibly do it. Hal Baird is at home plate with the rest of the Auburn team, waiting for David Ross, who's a pretty big guy, to come storming into the post-game celebration. And Hal Baird wore prescription sunglasses, and somebody knocked him down and smashed those sunglasses in that celebration. And it was just unbridled jubilation on the field and in our broadcast booth.
Paul Ellen, I've been working on Auburn sports radio broadcasts for the past 30 years. I started working with Rod. He was actually the studio producer for Auburn football broadcasts in 1996 and I believe 1997. And then he assumed other duties in the press box. But working in the studio, you have a certain bond with somebody. He was responsible for editing the highlights, making sure the commercials got on the air, making sure we got on the air. And he had already been doing baseball for a long time on the radio at that time. So we had a common bond there, because I did baseball back many years ago in the 70s and 80s. So we talked about that. We had a bond immediately. Working with Rod was a very easy bond. And as we moved along and as his career grew, we worked together on some baseball as opportunities allowed, although he and Andy Burcham worked together for the most part. So we became friends immediately. We became close friends very, very quickly. When you spend 7 hours with somebody in a closed room, you either really dislike them or really like them immediately, and you form a bond. So that's really what happened. And when Rod assumed the role of lead broadcaster for the network and the play-by-play man for football, basketball, and continuing with baseball, it was a natural progression for me to work with him. We didn't have any kind of adjustment period. Moving from working with Jim for all those years to working with Rod was no adjustment for me at all. It was just a natural progression. He was keyed up about the first game. There is no doubt about that. And one of the things we talked about during the year was how he was going to do the touchdown call, because Jim had made the touchdown Auburn call very famous and very iconic to Auburn people. And Rod wanted to continue that call to honor him. And, of course, that was the year we opened with Southern Cal and got beat up pretty badly and didn't score a touchdown and went took an injured team into Atlanta the next week and didn't score a touchdown there as well. So it was week three before he ever got to make a touchdown call. The first week we kind of laughed about it, kind of in a sarcastic way. The second week it was kind of, oh my goodness, you know, I'm the messenger, but the messenger is going to start getting blamed for this eventually. So he was immensely relieved when Jairus McIntyre caught that touchdown pass, and he got to finally give a touchdown Auburn call.
A little less than 5 yards to go. They need somewhere between the 26 and 27. The ball is spotted on the 31. Obamanu goes wide out to the far side. McIntyre and Taylor to the near side. Campbell under center to throw. Fires. Caught at the 25. Still on his feet. McIntyre to the 20, to the 15, to the 10. 5. Gone! Touchdown, Auburn! 31 yards. Campbell to McIntyre.
Hi, my name is Stan White. I was the quarterback at Auburn from 1990 to 1993 and currently serve as the radio analyst for Auburn football dating back to 2001, going on my 19th season. Some of my most memorable calls from Ron Bramlett, one being the Go Crazy Cadillac call. Reason for that is it was Rod's first year and our first year as partners, and it was the beginning of the Iron Bowl 2003, where Cadillac Williams took the handoff and went 80 yards and set the tone for that game, and told me at that time that Rod Bramlett had that knack for making the big call.
No question tonight, Auburn's recipe for success, first down. They've got to get good yardage on first down. No doubt they're going to come out and try to establish the running game again.
We see now, instead of Silas Daniels, Ben Obamanu getting the start, along with Jairus McIntyre at the wide receivers. It's an eye backfield on first down. Carnell Williams at the tailback. They'll hand it off to Williams up the middle. 25, cuts it inside. 30, 35, 40. There goes Cadillac. To the 50, to the 40, to the 30, to the 20, to the 15, 10. Go crazy, Cadillac. Go crazy. Touchdown, Auburn. 80 yards.
First play from scrimmage. Carnell Williams, he's been waiting for two whole years to do that right there. A heavy set, handoff on the draw. Thank you and goodbye, Carnell Williams. 80 yards down the sideline. Rod, how about these fans?
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable.
Wickles Pickles is proud to be the new sponsor of the Talking Tigers podcast. From Saturday sandwiches to Thanksgiving dinner, that secret 90-year-old recipe has people from all over calling to get some of those sweet and spicy jars. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Made fresh in Dadeville, Alabama.
One of the things that I think our whole crew looked forward to is Rod Bramlett's opening tease. It kind of set the tone for the broadcast that day, and he took great pride in finding unique facts about maybe the opponent that Auburn was playing against that day, and that's one thing that I'll always remember about Rod as well.
What does the Revolutionary War have to do with Fayetteville, Arkansas? Well, I'm about to tell you a story of how the war that created these United States of America also eventually led to the place where Auburn looks to return to form tonight. Hello again, everybody, and War Eagle.
In its entire football history, only four players from the state of Missouri have played at Auburn. So doesn't it seem a little odd to open SEC play in a place that is closer to Denver, Colorado, than the loveliest village? But that's what's happening tonight as the Auburn Football Tigers open their 85th season of SEC competition in Columbia for the first time ever.
On this eve before Halloween, there are children everywhere donning their favorite costumes in preparation for their trick-or-treat journey. For the Auburn football team, they'll be playing for one big treat, a Western Division championship and a berth in the SEC championship game. Hello again, everybody. War Eagle and happy Halloween. Rod Bramlett with Stan White, Quentin Riggins, and Andy Burcham, broadcasting to you from Vaught-Hemingway Stadium on the campus of the University of Mississippi. It's hard to believe, but the Tigers have a chance to clinch the Western Division before the month of November even arrives. A win by the Tigers would almost completely exorcise the demons that still linger from failing to meet expectations a year ago. almost, but not quite. With Auburn's version of Freddy Krueger and Michael Myers still lurking in the shadows, there is still plenty of work to do. Meanwhile, the Ole Miss Rebels are still haunted by the ghost of Eli Manning. Head coach David Cutcliffe has tried everything and everyone to get the offense going, including a three-headed quarterback system. Sure, when you compare the two teams, it doesn't look like this one is a real thriller, but it is the night before Halloween. There was a lunar eclipse this week, and the Boston Red Sox won the World Series. Strange days indeed. So watch out, Rebels. There's someone knocking at the door. Open at your own risk. On the other side, an angry bunch of Tigers who aren't leaving until they get what they've come for, the Western Division and a trip to Atlanta.
Hey, I'm Quentin Riggins. I joined the Auburn Network family. Actually, my first broadcast was in 1990. I was actually playing football in Canada, Winnipeg, and I got a call to come down and try out doing a little TV. And it was the Auburn Southern Miss homecoming game. And the actual play-by-play announcer, TV announcer, was Andy Burcham. And I did the color. And if Auburn fans remember, we were winning the game until the fourth quarter. And I think from my tone of excitement when we were winning to the sound of my voice when we were losing, I think it put me on stage to come and do radio the following year in 91. And in 91, I got to do radio, of course, Fife, Trotman were the play-by-play and color announcers. And there's a little guy over there doing a little baseball here and there named Rod Bramlett. And so Rod was on the broadcast team, and we were all, believe it or not, we were all together. The offices were small, and we all interact together. And it was pretty cool. So we go back, 1991, and I was as green as I could be. And the coaching that I got from the guys from Fife saying, hey. And I mean, first couple of years just awful. I knew what I wanted to say, and, it wasn't clear and everything. And the coaching I got from Fife and Trotman was just awesome. But the support I got from Andy and Rod that people couldn't see was just enormous. And just the positive reinforcement, you know what you see, you know your game, you know what you want to say, and help me pull out things that other people probably didn't notice or recognize, particularly from a linebacker's perspective. And it was new. And I think the message that all of them, Fife, Trotman, Rod, and Andy, was no one sees what you see. And we want you to put yourself, into the play, into the microphone, and help people that are riding down the road. Put them in the stadium and put them in your thoughts and help them see what you see. And when they slowed it down for me and helped me understand it, then it makes sense. What stood out with me, Rod? Number one, the road trips. And what we would do really on Saturday mornings is we'd meet up at breakfast, find out where the team. It was like Easter egg hunt. We'd go try to find out where's the team having a meeting there at breakfast. And then and he'd schedule, the coordinators come to meet with us to give us a game plan. And we have pictures. I got pictures of us at bowl games, everything, us sitting around waiting on the coaches to brief us. And, part of it, the thing for us and our inside thing, it was a big part of our preparation. And it meant a lot to us for the coaches to break away from their players and prepping their players to come and share with us, give us a little insight what to expect for the game. And when the coach would leave, then we would compare notes. And so to help us, how we want to roll it out for our listeners and who what. And, of course, some coaches were more forthright than others. And it was a thing for us, And we're like, well, hell, we didn't learn anything on that one, Or gosh, coach is a little tight. But if people can imagine a bunch of brothers doing something that they really, really like to do, whether it's a fishing trip, whether it's dinner, And you knew that on Friday night that you were going to get together with your brothers and do something on Saturday that y'all really, really like. That's what we had. And it's hard to explain, but putting it in that context, we would talk during the week. If he couldn't do a radio show during the week, and I don't think people realize how much of an ambassador being a radio announcer is for a college football team. We start in August at fall camp, and we don't get done until, you know, a week after the national championship game, and then we still get calls. And so that's every weekend, even when we're off. But during the week, depending on how big or small the game is, we're doing radio shows, call-in shows, doing lunches with either Rotary or quarterback clubs and so forth. And as a big part of that is we had to be prepared. And so part of our conversation with Roz, what you hearing? I mean, it's either called or text, hey, what you hearing? And what do you think? And then we would start. And that was something that I truly look forward to. When he pops up on my phone, I tell whoever, I say, okay, gotta go, this Rod. And it was simple, what you hearing? And then that laugh would start. And so I said, dang, look, give me a minute, I'll tell you what I'm hearing. But anyway, that's what I look forward to so much.
Second and six. This time McCaleb in the backfield. They'll give it to McCaleb around left end. McCaleb, 35 for a hole, 40, 45, 50, 45, 40, 35, 30. Foot race to the 20, to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Auburn!
No flags.
70 yards. Ontario McCaleb gives Auburn a 23-17 lead.
We play tricks on each other because I mentioned we're brothers. And there was a picture of me, I want to say, in the Columbus Ledger with Ontario McCaleb running by, and I'm on the far sideline. McCaleb, it's actually a picture of McCaleb running. He's probably on like the 25 going in, and I'm like John Travolta on Saturday Night Fever, I'm pointing, score, you're not, and you're on the, you're not supposed to cheer on the sideline, but hell, you know, this is breaking the game wide open. But Rod captured that moment, and it was electrifying, and the crowd went wild. And I know the Cam Newton was the signature, run, dragging Patrick Peterson into the end zone, and that was a Heisman Trophy run. But the McCaleb run was special.
In terms of doing football, basketball, and baseball, all three, very different ways to call play-by-play. Football, you have a blast of 7 to 10 seconds of action where you've got to be right on top of your game. And then you're setting up your analyst to look good. And that's basically what you're doing. You have to be crystal clear in the play-by-play and very succinct, and then set up your analyst to kind of explain what just happened. You're telling them what happened. The analyst is saying why it happened and what's likely to happen next. Basketball is an ongoing play-by-play. There's never really time to rest. Only in the timeouts are you really setting up your color man. The color man has to interject, and there has to be great chemistry there. But basketball, you have to be ready to go nonstop from the time you go on the air until the game ends and really through the postgame. Baseball, different from the other two completely because you're doing the play-by-play, and you announce the pitch. When the pitcher get set to go to the windup or go to the stretch, the play-by-play guy has got anywhere from 2 seconds to maybe 15 seconds to do play-by-play. The rest of the time, it's either a monologue or a conversation, depending on whether you have someone working with you or not. It was very easy to work with Rod in baseball because it was a carryover of the conversations we would be having if we were two guys watching the game out in row 10 down the first baseline. The only thing was I had to pause to let him do his 10 seconds of play-by-play to interrupt our conversation, or he had to do the same. And he was equally good at doing the play-by-play and shifting over to the analyst role. So they're three very different things. The common denominator is preparation. He was as good at preparation as anybody I ever saw.
I'm Brad Law, and I was Rod's producer for football and men's basketball from 2009 to 2011, and again from 2016 through the Final Four run of 2019. My first stint as the producer in the booth for football was 2009-2010, and part of my job was to schedule the commercial breaks that run on the network and set them up in the computer system. Well, the computer that ran the commercials locked up on us during the Clemson game early in the year, but it only affected one commercial break. We rebooted the computer. It was fine. Nobody knew any different. Well, 3 weeks later, we're at Kentucky, and the tease is coming soon, and the computer locks up again. Now, a lot of play-by-play guys would have lost it, but Rod was unfazed. And not only was he unfazed, we got through the game, and we all know how important that tease is to the broadcast, and we know now how pivotal that Kentucky game was in 2010. And in the end, Rod had the presence of mind to transform what was going to be that opening tease into a final call.
The snapper is Harris, the holder is Caudle. It will be just inside a 24-yard field goal attempt. Snap, place, kick is up. It's good! Auburn wins! 1 second, no, the clock has expired. 37-34, fifth game-winning field goal for Auburn. And the best comparison I can come up with for this Auburn team tonight, it's appropriate here in the Bluegrass. You remember the great horse Secretariat. When he passed away, doctors discovered that his heart was 2.5 times the size of a normal horse. Auburn played like Secretariat right there on that final drive.
19 plays.
One of my most memorable calls from Rod actually was 2013. It was Gus Malzahn's first year back as the head coach at Auburn, and Auburn had struggled the year before, so they weren't supposed to be a contender, so to speak, that year. And Auburn goes out to College Station to take on Johnny Manziel and Texas A&M, and it's a back-and-forth game. Auburn took the lead late in that game, and then Johnny Manziel ran onto the field to lead Texas A&M back to victory, so everyone thought. And then comes Dee Ford on fourth down, and he had a huge sack of Johnny Manziel to solidify the victory. And that call of Dee Ford's sack is one of my favorite Rod Bramlett calls. And then at the end of that game, when Auburn's in victory formation, Rod stated that Auburn served notice to the college football world that they are back. That is one call that I will never forget, one of my most favorite calls from Rod Bramlett.
The greatest formation in college football anywhere, particularly on the road, the victory formation. Marshall will take a knee. That will end it. And here in the home of the 12th man, the Auburn Tigers have served notice to the college football world that they are back. 45-41, Auburn defeats number 7, Texas A&M, here in Kyle Field.
I wasn't in Auburn in 2013. I was working as the Michigan studio host that year. But when Auburn was playing, I always had an eye on the game. And I watched Auburn get that big lead over Georgia and then lose that big lead over Georgia on a controversial touchdown call. And I think I even tweeted about what a disappointing loss it would be. And then, of course, the miracle.
Rod and I had talked a lot through the years about what the lead announcer, what the play-by-play guy is supposed to be for a school and for Auburn in particular. You want to be a homer, but you don't want to come across as a homer on the air. You want to come across so that any fan listening to you knows, believes, gives you credibility in what you're saying. At the same time, fans should know from your inflection how things are going for the Tigers that day. If you're exuberant, they're going to know things are going pretty well. If you have a different tone of voice, they're going to know things are not going all that well. And Rod really walked that line very well. That particular day, Auburn blew a 20-point lead in the fourth quarter. It had gone from a big, big win for Gus Malzahn's team that was going to set up a winner-take-all showdown with Alabama 2 weeks following to a situation that was going to go down as one of the worst losses in Auburn history, a 20-point lead blown in the fourth quarter at home to Georgia. And when you listened to the call, he never lost faith, but you can tell by his inflection, things ain't going real well for the Tigers in this fourth quarter. So when he starts off, here's your ball game. It's fourth and 18, 37-yard line, final minute of the game. You can tell he never loses composure. His preparation kicked in. And when things went from as low as they could get, a fourth and 18 after you've blown a 20-point lead to one of your biggest rivals, to ecstasy when you get a miracle touchdown, his preparation kicked in. You never lose the flow of the game.
George is able to hold on here, and they lead by a point. All right, here we go. Fourth and 18 for the Tigers. Here's your ball game. Nick Marshall stands in, steps up. He's going to throw downfield, just a home run ball, and it is tipped off. And Lewis caught it on the deflection. Lewis is going to score. Lewis is going to score. Lewis is going to score. Touchdown, Auburn. Touchdown, Auburn. A miracle in Jordan Hare. A miracle in Jordan Hare. 73 yards, and the Tigers, with 25 seconds to go, lead 43-38.
And we got flags all over the field. My goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Hold the phone and see what the flags are about.
And it looks as if...
Let's hear.
The result of the play is a touchdown. We have an unsportsmanlike on number 90 of the offense on Auburn.
To quote...
Wait a minute now, you have a unsportsmanlike on Auburn on number 90, Gabe Wright. Now here's the problem. That's a penalty on the kickoff, it looks as if. Wow, can you believe it?
To quote one of my idols in the business, Larry Munson, I think I just broke my chair.
Listen to some other announcers, some other places. It's hard to tell what goes on when you have a game swing that far in advance. And I won't call any names, but in the Big Ten a few years ago, there was a blocked punt that decided the entire Big Ten race. You couldn't tell listening on the radio what in the heck had happened. Rod never loses his composure. This went from the pits to the penthouse, from the outhouse to the penthouse, as Coach Tuberville used to say. And he never loses his composure. The inflection changes, but it's a crystal clear call. And that's why I chose that call as one of the ones I really think about.
Andy Burcham and I work the sideline. Andy does the post-game radio show. Andy couldn't do it. Once we get toward the end of the year, he has obligations with women's basketball. So he had to go and cover women's basketball. And so so I had to leave the field with about 2 minutes to go, 3 minutes to go in the Georgia game. And went to the locker room, and it's me in there, John Cole, who was – our producer at the time, and Christy Malzahn. And she couldn't watch the game either. And so we had TV in there, and we had Rod and Stan piped in. And we were all down. Georgia was up. And we're just, you know, I'm trying to sit there and writing out questions for postgame. And we're just kind of talking it through. And then here comes, the pass, and we're like, oh my God, and Rod's call, and was just electric, and then to be in the Heisman room and hear Rod and Stan make the call, and then the students above us. and the vibrations that coincide with it just make the hair stand on the back of the neck. I wish I could put you in the place. And we were just, all three of us were just hugging. And we could still hear Rod and Stan make the call. And it was just like, wow, can you believe it? And Christy Malzahn, she just bust out the door, you know, and running out there so she could see all the action together, the three of us. Fast forward to kick six. Same scenario. I'm doing post-game radio. So I'm trying to prepare. So I come off the field in the locker room, same three people, John Cole, Christy Malzahn, and we're talking, man, it's kind of weird, isn't it, you know? And just like, you know, we're in there and what seemed like for eternity, you know, we call timeout, we change, you know, the returner, and we put Chris Davis in the game. And, of course, everybody knows what happened. Alabama kicks it. And then Rod is setting the table.
Yeah, Adam Griffith. So Adam Griffith will try the field goal here. And Griffith is 1 for 2 on the year. His longest is 20. But obviously they feel like he has the leg to get it there. Chris Davis is going to drop back into the end zone in single safety. So I guess if this thing comes up short, he can field it and run it out. All right, here we go. 56-yarder. Does not have the leg. And Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
I remember standing up, John Cole standing up, Christy Malzahn, and we're watching the TV. And we're half a second behind. There's a little delay, and the roar from the students above us and the stomping, we open up the door because we think the door is coming off the hinge. We think somebody's beating on the door, but it's the vibrations from the excitement. And hearing Rod in the background and then Stan over top, you know, with his soprano voice, if you will, from the excitement. And to be a part of history with those guys in that moment and celebrate is just, if I never, ever call another game, that's it.
My absolute favorite on-air interaction with Rod. It came in 2017 at Plainsman Park. Now, Rod was completely professional, completely poised, completely prepared, no matter what. But on this night, South Alabama just came out in a midweek game and hammered Auburn early. It was a runaway game, never in question. And there was weather on the way, and so there was a big question about whether or not we would finish the game. Things got a little bit silly when we devolved into a little bit of storytelling. And we both got to laughing so hard that neither of us could speak, which is pretty terrible on a baseball radio broadcast. This is such a precious memory, though, now. And at one point, all you can hear is the ping of the bat on a foul ball.
It's closing in on us.
First pitch to Estes, a called strike. And it's gotten cooler as the sun has gone down. That's a part of it. Sun's gone down, so it's gotten cooler. And the breeze is picking up a little, too.
I don't think these are necessarily storms, bad storms that are heading this way, but a lot of rain coming.
Pitch low to Estes, ball one. Right-handed hitting, second baseman pops it up. At short. LeBounty back on the edge of the center field grass, maybe a step or two into the grass. He's got it for out number two. Birds are singing here at the ballpark tonight, too.
A sure sign of rain.
Thank you, Farmer Rod. And Daniel Robert will be the batter. I always thought it was if your knee starts hurting.
So that's why it started hurting in the fifth inning.
Right. Nothing and one to Robert. It's either rain or somebody's talking about you. I don't know how. I'm not sure.
My favorite one, first pitch.
Uh-huh. 0-1 on the way. Outside, a ball and a strike.
My favorite one my grandmother used to tell me. By the way, my grandmother had six fingers. I'm not kidding. She had, well, I don't know if technically six fingers, but hang on.
Fouled off to the left. 1-2.
She had a thumb that was.
Low and away, ball two. Runner's going to take off. The ball got away from Barnes to his left, and it allows Todd to take second base.
Her thumb was shaped like a Y. She had two fingernails on her thumb.
Balls, two strikes. Two outs in the sixth. Another sharply hit foul ball. That one off the edge of the net that extends all the way down past the dugouts on either side here. Still 2-2.
But she would always tell me.
Yes.
When her hand started itching, said, somebody's about to give me money. That was her saying.
2-2 pitches, low to Robert.
I don't know what the thumb thing had to do with any of that, but I just thought about it.
Not a thing.
you can't stop, can you?
I shouldn't look at texts people listening to the game.
Our announcer for tomorrow's game is chiming in on a story. It's a true story, too.
Yeah, I believe it. 2-1 is a strike, 2-2. It's good practice for me. Try and maintain my composure. So you've got me once, and Paul got me once in the very first game of the year.
South Carolina, huge favorite. They were only a couple of years off three straight College World Series trips. Butch Thompson was in year number two, I believe, but really his first half of a recruiting class was freshman. He had a couple of guys, Connor Davis and Will Holland, that were true freshmen. They were playing a big role, not much expected. Auburn had won the first game of the series, lost the second game, so rubber game of the series that weekend, and you know, South Carolina was a better team than Auburn, talent-wise. Rod's preparation really kicks in on this particular call. Again, I'm getting ready to go down and do the post game, and Auburn has lost the series. We're down two with two outs in the ninth inning, as I recall. It was certainly the bottom of the ninth. I believe there were two outs when he hit it. And again, you could tell from his inflection, things hadn't gone great for the Tigers that day. Better times are coming, but it's a crystal clear call. He never loses sight of the fact that this is the winning run at the plate, however unlikely it may be with a true freshman coming up against one of the better relief pitchers in the conference. And when he makes that call, again, he takes you from very stoic, accepting a loss kind of attitude to an attitude of again, hey, not only are better things on the way, better things are here. It's just a great, great, crystal clear call.
Swing, driven, deep left field, and the Tigers have won the ball game. It's a walk-off winner for the freshman, Connor Davis. Tigers win in unbelievable fashion. Oh, my goodness. Connor Davis. The hero on Sunday, he comes home, and he's mobbed at home plate, and the Tigers have taken the series in dramatic fashion. Holy cow!
There's a man in Conway, South Carolina, who's done it. A man sitting
right next to me who has done it twice and won it once. And then there's a man who will be pacing the sideline today who joins the club of Auburn coaches that has taken a team to the SEC Tournament Championship game. Oh, the storylines, they run deeper than the Cumberland River as we prepare to crown champion in the Music City. Hello again, everybody, in War Eagle. I'm Rod Bramlett with Hall of Fame coach Sonny Smith inside Bridgestone Arena, and back in our Auburn Sports Network studio is Brad Law. The man that joins the club today is trying to win a title against a school and a place which he once called home, a place where he revived a basketball program. That man now calls Auburn home, and it is clear that he has brought this program from the ashes as well. Then there are the teams. Last year, they shared a regular season title. It's been four decades since the tournament crown went to Rocky Top, and it's been 34 years since it went home to the Plains. One thing for sure, there won't be any sharing today.
I was in the TV booth doing an Auburn baseball game, and we're keeping up with the men's basketball game, the championship game of the SEC tournament. And when it became very apparent that Auburn was going to win the game, my first thought was Rod Bramlett and Sonny Smith. And we were able to use their radio call coupled with the TV audio or TV video during the baseball broadcast on with War Eagle Productions and SEC Network Plus. And listening to Rod and Sonny call those final seconds when Auburn and they knew that Auburn was going to win its first SEC basketball championship in the tournament, the first time since Sonny Smith was the head coach. I'll admit, I got very emotional listening and watching that call. I knew how much it meant, not only to Auburn, but to those two. And the reverence that Rod had for Sonny, not only as a fabulous color commentator, but for a man that was such an important part of Auburn athletics history and Auburn basketball history. And I just tried to imagine what was going through their minds at the time. And that meant a great deal to me that they would have a chance not only to call that game, but to be a part of an SEC tournament championship. Little did we know what was still to come for that men's basketball season, the greatest basketball season in Auburn men's basketball history.
Tennessee the rebound. Shot clock is off. 13 seconds to go. Long three for Johnson. Short. Dowdy the rebound. He will hold it on his hip, and that will do it. There'll be no sharing with Tennessee this year. Auburn 84, Tennessee 64. For the first time in 34 years, the Tigers are SEC tournament champions. Let the confetti fall.
I was emotional listening to Rod and Sonny call those final seconds because I knew how much it meant to those two to be a part of that. We all, in our profession, we should all hope to have the opportunity to have a call and to be a part of something as special as that one was.
We are like a second family in the fall. All of us on the broadcast, on the air, behind the scenes. What makes us so unique, and I think better than any other broadcast team, is the fact that every single one of us, whether on the air, behind the scenes, either went to Auburn, graduated from Auburn, played for Auburn, or been around Auburn Athletics for over 20 years. And I don't know if there's any other broadcast team that can say that. And the reason it's so special is we all, as you can tell, hopefully, have a vested interest in what's going on the field.
What a magical season this has been, and it's going to continue.
He struck him out. The Tigers win, and they're going to the College World Series for the first time in 18 years. Boys and girls, pack your bags. We're going to Omaha.
38-28, Auburn over Tennessee. War Eagle, everybody. The Tigers have gone 12-0.
Tigers win 78-77. Trevante Barber hits one at the buzzer almost.
Now the 1-2 pitch. Fastball driven. Deep left center field. That ball is gone.
Oh my goodness.
It's gone. It's gone. It's gone. It's gone. 11-9 Auburn. 11-9 Auburn. Great sets and done it again.
Takes the snap.
looking for the receiver. He's got Lutzenkirchen. Touchdown, Auburn! Touchdown, Auburn! Lutzenkirchen, he threw it back and
Byron waits for the snap into place. There it is. The kick is up. The kick is good! Auburn wins! 22-19!
And now, here in the desert, Auburn's journey is complete. 53 years of waiting, of hoping, of dreaming, of coming so close. It's all over. The Auburn Tigers are on top of the college football world, and the view from up here is sheer perfection. Auburn 22, Oregon 19. The Tigers are BCS national champions.
56-yarder. It's got, no, does not have the leg. And Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game. He ran the missed field goal back. He ran it back 109 yards. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight. Holy cow. Oh, my God! Auburn wins! Auburn has won the Iron Bowl! Auburn has won the Iron Bowl in the most unbelievable fashion you will ever see! I cannot believe it! 34-28!
Inbounds to Canada, to Bowers. Now to KT. Catch, shoot, three.
Got it! He got it!
Higgins to Washington for three. Short. Harper, rebound. Rips it away. That does it! History has been made! The Auburn Tigers, for the first time ever, are going to the Final Four. Auburn 77, Kentucky 71. The Tigers are headed to Minneapolis.
I'm Rod Bramlett. Until next time, War Eagle, and so long, everybody.
On the next Talking Tigers podcast, Auburn women's golf coach Melissa Llewellyn was part of a national championship at Tulsa. She won the individual title that year, 1988. Her mother, the legendary Dale McNamara, was the coach of the Golden Hurricane. Llewellyn coached a national championship herself at Arizona State before coming to Auburn, and she's building another powerhouse on the plains. Coach Llewellyn and her mother, Coach McNamara, are next. For Brad Law, Hal Baird, Paul Ellen, Stan White, Quentin Riggins, our friend Rod Bramlett, and the Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles, I'm Andy Burcham. Be safe and be well. War Eagle.